Blog Talk Radio.
And as always, it is important for you to understand this program is an anatomy of oppression, and therefore it requires an anatomy of colonialism, which preceded fascism by over 500 years. It is an anatomy of imperialism and the American capitalist system. And so tonight we are saying, for your understanding, for February, so-called Black History Month, the importance of any history is who tells it. And to date, people of color do not tell their history. And so we have many speakers lined up for you today, but first we have Ralph Pointer. What's happening?
My brothers and sisters, thank you for tuning in this evening. There is so much to be said, and as I've said over and over again, I do look forward to this program because it's education for me. It's entertainment for me. And I will begin this evening by apologizing for our poor quality of transmission. One day, hopefully, we will get our act together and upgrade our equipment because there is so much wonderful information. But I will say one thing before I turn the program back to our wonderful speakers, that if you spent the week watching corporate media, I repeat Malcolm X's exclamation, you have been bamboozled. We have Kamala Harris and Joe Biden talking about the 500,000 deaths, but not one word about a national health system. We hear people talking about using the phrase fascist state. Well, my friends, as our dear sister Lynn Stewart told us a long time ago, certain members of our community have faced the fascist state for a long, long time. It's not coming. It has been here. And it was based on slavery. It was based on denying people human rights. It was based on an economic system of oppression. And I started off by saying that we have so many wonderful speakers, I was going to keep my comments to a minimum. And so, without further ado, I'm going to lean back and listen to the wonderful speakers that our dear Sister Betty has lined up for us this evening. Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. We're going to move right ahead because already the calls are jumping off the charts here. We're going to start off, as we usually do, with an update on our political prisoners. After our poet in residence, Professor Louis.
Your microphone is open, Professor Louis.
All right. War on drugs, war on black and brown. This is exactly what's going down. Don't look in a book, take a good look around. War on drugs, war on black and brown. Everybody knows black people get high, and everybody knows white people get high. Who gets higher is just about even. Statistics you believe in say it's even Steven, but who goes to jail is the brown and the black. If you don't think so, you've been smoking crack. Drug use and abuse is everywhere, but who goes to prison is not shared. White college kid does dope in his dormitory. Ghetto kid on the corner goes to the reformatory. Same act, same fact, but not the same end. What you saw about the law, that's just pretend. Ghetto kid goes to jail for using drugs. White kid gets counseling, rehab, tough love, and you didn't hurt nobody but yourself. You didn't lay a finger on nobody else, but drug use can get you some time. You wonder like thunder, where is the crime? 'Cause we know what color gets frisked and stopped, and you could trust what color gets busted by the cop, and it's your lawyer who saw you, else the public defender. In the end, he's so busy, he don't care where they send you, and it's years of charges. That time is long. In court, the cop always right and you're always wrong, and you know the DA wants a conviction. More conviction is his job description. It's all played out, laid out plain as could be. The guy from the ghetto better cop a plea. You do time for the crime, and when you come out, your soul gets parole without a doubt. You serve that out, you think you're through, but the law is not through with you. You go for a job, and every time you come to the line where you got a sign, I committed a crime. Housing, you saw, all closed the door. We don't take criminals here no more. Sometimes no food stamps, no public assistance. Looks like the system don't want your existence. You can't float your boat, and you get that note they send in the end. You can't even vote. It's bitter medicine, but you got out to prison, and you are now a second-class citizen. And you're all on the fence in this great audience Are you pure and so sure of your innocence? You maybe once tasted, then got wasted down at the bar, grumbled, stumbled, and then drove the car. Maybe got a little lax when you paid your tax. You went for the minimum, not for the max. Maybe fooled the doc for an extra painkiller. You were feeling like you fought the thriller in Manila. Doctor wrote the note for the pills you buy. It's true, he knew you were just getting high, yes indeed. Maybe smoked a little weed just to get a little buzz. Blew a little coke just to see what it was. Break all these laws without pause and without fail. If you got the money, you won't go to jail, 'cause war on drugs is war on brown and black. If you don't got the dollars, look out, Jack. It's money in the front, color in the back. War on drugs, war on brown and black. And at night, you might not want the sight of jail in your neighborhood, but the prison business is doing good. Private prisons make good investment, make money off the guilty, money off the innocent. Prison contractors got big-time investors. They need drug users, three-time losers, political protesters, guards white, prisoners black. Corporations get workers they don't gotta pay back, and with the jail without fail, full of black and brown, without a visit. What is it that's really going down? It's hard to ignore. Big people can't use the N-word no more, but they still want control like they had before. They got words that are minimal, not even subliminal. Can't call them a nigger. You call them a criminal. And for criminals, it's true. We know what to do. They're second-class citizens through and through in this situation across the nation. It's called mass incarceration. We got more people in jail than any other country. We got more prisons. We spend more money up, down, all around. It's come to pass. Millions of people are now second class, and politicians, you find, talk out of their mind. The police and the law are color blind. Now, I see color, you see color. When we took a look, we see one another. What we do about color, that's the test. In the heart, can you start to really do your best? Because when the last nail fills the jail with black and brown, even the poor white guy might go down, and you be high as the sky. Someone might snitch, but you still walk free if you're white and rich. And crime's not what it seems. It's not in the genes. When you got them at the bottom, we're all human beings, and we're either going to learn or burn together, not make up fairy tales. Our kind is better. So it's not a few bad apples. It's the whole system, Jew, Muslim, or Christian. Just look and listen. Millions of people in cages. It's not very nice. In or out the prison, we all pay the price. War on drugs is war on brown and black. Stolen lives that never come back. It's not a war on thugs, not a war on crack. War on drugs is war on brown and black.
Well, are we keeping our promise? Education and entertainment. I love that. Truer words were never spoken. And Professor Louis, keep it coming, because we love it. And pretty soon, we're going to have young people walking up and down the street, speaking and repeating the poetry, the education, the political savvy of Professor Louis. Thank you again, Professor Louis. Sister Betty.
Thank you again. This is Liberation Poetry. And we do this in honor of Sister Lynn, because this was inspirational soul music to her. And she always had fundraisers, and one of the main contributors and performers for her fundraiser was Professor Louis. We don't forget. We don't forget those who were there when we needed them the most. Without further ado, even though we see Sister Nellie and Tom and Joel and Sister Belinda, we got to go to the person from New York City, Jericho, who gives us an update on our political prisoners, especially the COVID count. You should understand, when Professor Louis talks about our kids going in for maybe 2 ounces of coke, okay, while these other rich kids get out for God knows how much fentanyl, and their minds are blown, and they'll never come back, and the opiate corporations and pharmacies that sold it, the number one family, got off with a slap on the wrist. Our kids are still in jail, and now they are facing a death sentence because of COVID. So, Sister Ann, are you in the house?
I am in the house. Thank you, Sister Betty. I'll try to be as concise as possible since you have so many people speaking. Great poem by Professor Louis there. Fantastic. All right, so I will once again give the COVID data. This is from the Marshall Project. This is as of February 19th at 5 p.m. So there's probably more people now, you know, in those few days. But as of February 19th, 381,462 people imprisoned in this country have contracted COVID-19, at least that many. And out of that many people, at least 2,419 have died. They have died because they were sentenced to death by incarceration. And so this is really a horrible, horrible crime when you think about it. So there's that, which is always very serious. And maybe people think I repeat myself every week, but we do have some ongoing things that we are really trying to get accomplished. Our dear brother Kamau Siddiqui is still having this problem, which, you know, has been ongoing for several years. I was looking back through all the campaigns. We've been doing one in 2018 for the same reason, that they wanted to amputate his left. So they're still trying to amputate his left foot at the ankle, I believe. So the number to call at the so-called medical facility where he is being totally illegally held is 706-855-4700. I repeat, 706-855-4700. Now, when you call, even though Kamau legally changed his name from Freddie Hilton to Kamau Siddiqui, they still list him as Freddie Hilton. So when you call, you must use his government name, Freddie Hilton, and his Georgia prisoner ID, 115-0688. All of this information is at jerichony.org, so please feel free to go to the website and make those phone calls. This is really, really outrageous. You know, the man is ill enough anyway, and now they're saying they want to amputate his foot. Now, for people who might not know Kamau, Kamau, among other things, is a martial artist. So, you know, for a martial artist to have the threat of losing their foot is not the same as, you know, me being threatened to lose my foot because, you know, they use their whole bodies in the martial arts. So there's that, and I really wish people, it really is urgent. We say urgent medical action, we mean it. He needs to see a wound specialist, and he needs to get proper treatment, which has not been happening. So that's really, really important. And the other thing that's really important, as we've been saying, we are keeping this ongoing push for Ed Poindexter to get him, you know, a commutation of sentence to time served, which has been 50 years for a man who is totally, totally innocent, totally framed by COINTELPRO, who has mentored thousands of young people over the years on the inside, truly upstanding person, hasn't had an infraction in God knows how long. And, you know, the man is older. He's got various medical problems, including the fact that he has to go to dialysis every week. They're not taking him out of the prison to do that anymore because he was getting too ill. They're actually doing it in the prison. He's hoping to get a kidney transplant, but that may or may not happen because his other medical complications and comorbidities might make that kind of surgery too dangerous for him. So this, all this information is also on jerichony.org. Successfully, the people in Omaha were able to put up a billboard for Ed, which is still up, and, you know, to call attention to the case in Omaha, which is where he is, well, where he is from. And, you know, they've been very active and busy. So they need our support, too. So there's some numbers you can call, and you can also write, and you can also email. We even have a little sample letter for people. We have a sample script. You don't even have to think too much about it. No, it's laid out for everybody. Once again, jerichony.org. So then we also have Dr. Mutulu Shakur, who I think is fairly famous, and most people do know that name. We're on the third round of compassionate release efforts for Dr. Mutulu Shakur. If you can possibly donate some money, that would be good, because, you know, the legal team is going to need it for legal expenses. And there's a petition which has been up for a long time, because it's been up since the first time we did this. Well, it says 2020, straight ahead. You can sign the petition supporting the compassionate release of Dr. Mutulu Shakur. Dr. Mutulu Shakur has stage 3, if not stage 4 by now, bone marrow cancer. He's another elder. You know, there's no reason that they should not release Mutulu. He should have been released a long time ago, if he should have been in prison at all. So his legal team is continuing to pursue all avenues to secure his release. But the very least we can do is sign a petition, and if we have not already done so, we can share it with our friends and stuff and say, hey, look, you know, this is really serious. Could you take a few minutes and sign this petition? We have heard from Sundiata's legal team that the appeal has been submitted, the appeal of the last parole denial. So that is a hopeful sign, and I don't have any more information in terms of details than that right now, but people can certainly write to Sundiata. That would be a great thing for people to do. He said he has been getting a lot of mail, and he's makes him feel good. You know, he says, oh, I know so many people care about me out here. And we're like, yes, we do, Sundiata. We care about you very much. And then Russell Maroon Schultz, as everybody knows, stage 4 colorectal cancer. Yeah, even after the surgery, he still has cancer. He's going for another round of chemo. But we're still talking to Governor Wolf. Governor Wolf can be contacted at 717-787-2500. Let's keep it up and, you know, keep the heat on these so-called elected officials so that, you know, they're supposed to represent us and respond to our demands. So if we don't make the demands, they can't respond. And as we know, power concedes nothing without a demand. So we have to be very demanding and in their face and consistent and insistent and persistent, because this is the year, 2021. This is the year we say we're going to bring them all home. We're going to free everybody. So what's the call? Free them all. Thank you so much, Ralph and Betty.
Mr. Betty.
Thank you, Sister Ann. We appreciate that. We hope you'll hang in there. We may be coming back to you later. Right now, before we go to Sister Nellie, we need to take a stop and go to St. Louis, where the whole struggle for freedom is taking place. And if you don't understand what I mean, as soon as the slaves finished helping the so-called Union soldier win, because the slaves who fought and joined the Union Army made the difference, they established public education, because, as Frederick Douglass said, education and slavery are incompatible. And right now in America, there is an amazing ethnic cleansing going on in every single state in this country of black and brown educators. And along and parallel with this vicious fascism and racism is the destruction of our public school system. Well, in St. Louis, not hands up, don't shoot, but hands up, fight back, we have some warriors from the African People's Socialist Party, and we're going to open their mics right now and ask them, Ferguson, are you in the house?
Your microphone is open, Ferguson.
St. Louis.
Uhuru, yes.
Uhuru!
Thank you. This is Uhuru. This is Herdosha Columbai Bentham. Thank you for having me. Uhuru.
Uhuru.
So tell us what you've been doing.
Yes, I just really want to first appreciate both of you for all the work that you have been doing for so long, you know, for African people. I really, really appreciate and have learned so much from you both being part of the Black is Back Coalition. And like I said, my name is Herdosha Columbai Bentham, and I'm running for office in the third ward. St. Louis has 28 wards, and we are, and I'm running for Ward 3, and my comrade Chicharu Musimba is running for Ward 21. And so it's two candidates, one movement. And first point on our platform is reparation to the Black community. You know, these campaigns are incredible, and we've been doing amazing work on the grounds in St. Louis, Missouri, since Ferguson, and since then, just in the north side of St. Louis, the 3rd Ward and the 21st Ward, but all of the north side where it's real Black, St. Louis is. But what is happening is neo-colonial puppets has been the leadership that has, you know, allowed our schools to fail our community for gentrification and big developers to just swallow up the city and push African people out. And so we've been engaged in this struggle, and it's been very, 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 very powerful to see the masses of people unite with our platform and unite with the struggle that we need Black community control over the schools, Black community control over the police, that we need power at the people. And so I'm just really, really excited, and we are right at the door. March the 2nd will be the general election. Feeling very excited, you know, and really want to call on all the listeners.
Well, Sister Columbayi, can we bring in your partner in crime, Chichara, Chichara? Your mic is open.
Yeah, Uhuru. Uhuru. Yeah.
Both of your mics are open. Go for it. Wage war.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Okay, Yeah, that's a good a segue that I appreciate because we are partners in crime, because what we're doing is a crime. It was a crime to fight for your freedom, and it was a crime, you know, it was illegal to be a slave, and we're trying to make sure our people are no longer slaves anymore. So we fighting for freedom, and that's a crime in this country. My name is Chicharu Musimba, and I'm running for alderman of the 21st Ward in the city of St. Louis on the platform of reparations and genuine economic development. And I just want to thank Sister Betty and Brother Ralph, you know, longtime warriors. I would never, ever, ever forget the saying that I hear constantly from Sister Betty, cats don't educate mice, they eat them, you know. And we are waging an incredible struggle on the ground. And one good thing about running the political campaigns is that it gives you a certain kind of ability to measure the extent to which you are taking up political and physical space. And we are fighting to put Black power back on the agenda, revolutionary solutions back on the agenda, and we are raising the call for reparations and genuine economic development to the Black community control of schools, Black community control of the police, and we're saying that we have one problem in North St. Louis, and it's the problem, the same problem we face all over the African world, and that is everything we produce is constantly looted, you know, by people who live at the expense of Black people in North St. Louis and everywhere we find ourselves. So we are waging campaigns to ensure that Black people in my community, in our community, take back our resources to stop the big gentrifiers and real estate speculators who get tax breaks for nearly, you know, where they go nearly 2.5 decades without paying any taxes, and they don't develop anything, they don't create jobs. They buy properties in North St. Louis, and they often sit on them and let them rot, you know. And then they buy off politicians and force them and influence them to pass policies that would gentrify North St. Louis out of existence, so that their property values would go up. And the older persons, many of whom look like us, they attack the Black community. They wage war on the Black community on behalf of these gentrifiers whom they work for. So we are fighting back against that. We are bringing people back into the political process, and we are creating a whole educated, highly informed, highly mobilized, politicized constituency of people who are armed with analysis and, you know, political education.
Do you want to tell people where that analysis came from?
Yeah, absolutely. We are students. We are members of the African People's Socialist Party. We are students of Chairman Omali Ishitela, you know, the leading revolutionary theoretician in our lifetime. And, you know, we are African internationalists. You know, that is our philosophy. That's our theory, which explains the world and explains that capitalism has its origins and slavery and colonialism. And that's the fundamental contradiction that every black person all over the planet faces. We are one people. We have, you know, one fight to free African people everywhere. And we are expressing that right here on the ground in the most practical way, you know, translating this incredible theory, revolutionary theory, on the ground into the real practical struggles that people face every day. And it is transforming the community, I believe.
Mr. Columbia, you want to tell us how many schools they tried to close on y'all?
Yes, you know, this has been an ongoing process, but just here recently, they have closed down 10 schools, you know, and this is a crime, and this is the same crime. It's a seamless process. It's the same crime that we have no grocery stores or clean food in our community. It's the same crime that we have not the necessary resources that we need in our community, and we experience gentrification. And, you know, it's a real reality that 40% of the people that live on the north side are living off barely $5 a day. And this is part of the looting process that has been an ongoing process. So when these schools have been shut down, we wasn't shocked. And we know that it will continue to be shut down until we be able to have gain control over the school system. Black community control over the schools is the demand. And that looks like us being able to say what the curriculum looks like, you know, how the whole setup should be happening. It has to be in the control of the people, of the community, or we're going to, you know, talk about 10 schools now, and we'll be talking about 10 schools later. And it will continue to shut our schools down and fail our children. I know this school system very, very well in my own personal life, and even having two young daughters myself, and even trying to find a elementary school that they can go to in your own community. And so the time is now for us to activate the people. We don't have another 600 years to continue to stay complacent to our captivity. So it's time for us to unite the people across the world, make these campaigns not only something that people are supporting only in St. Louis, but just like we on this show tonight, that these have to be the blueprint where we see happen everywhere African people are. The demand have to be for black power back on the agenda, with, you know, real revolutionary candidates that unite with the 19 points that's put forth by the Black is Back Coalition. This is when we're going to see, you know, real change. And, you know, my campaign slogan is revolutionary times, revolutionary solutions, because we are living in revolutionary times, and it's going to take revolutionary solutions to solve the issues of the black community.
Well, thank you so much for that. Do you have a website that we could go to see you, because pay you? Because one of the things I say, to know you, to see you, is to love you. Your campaigns are going to move because you are so dynamic. Two positions, one solution. Give us your website so that we can learn more of your campaign and make donations to your campaign.
Yeah, people can go. This is Tatar Masimba, again, running for Alderperson for Ward 21, the city of St. Louis, running an international campaign. No, people can go to votemasimba.org, votemasimba.org, and find out more information. You'll see this dynamic platform. You can sign up to donate, volunteer, or you can take this platform and take it where you are and fight with it, you know. And Columbia, would you like me to get your website?
Yeah, and you can go to votecolumbia.org. It's votecolumbia.org, and Columbia is K-A-L-A-M-B-Y-I. And, you know, these campaigns is part of the strategy is for black power. And so all the freedom-loving people out there, I appreciate you, and I just want to salute you already for making a donation to both of these incredible campaigns that is really raging and fighting against the status quo. You know, myself and Chitara are running against the machine. That's what we are doing. And, you know, the person that I'm running against has been in office for 44 years, that has asked for the National Guard to come into our community and, you know, publicly ask for the National Guards to come into our community. You know, Chitara's opponent has asked for the police to do drills and offered gave the police more money in the city budget and brags about it. We're saying hell no to the status quo. The African working class has its own vehicle and its own agenda, and it's a black agenda, putting black power back on the agenda. So support these campaigns.
Well, thank you so much for that. And as I say to everyone, go to those websites, listen to what these young people are doing, because the question is, where are the young people and what are they doing? Here they are. Follow them. Support them.
And I want to let you know, these people were part of the uprising when Brother Brown was killed and his body was laid there as if he was a carcass from a different species. And these young people rose up, and they're still rising up. They're taking it to the streets, and they're taking it to the institutions that the colonialists use to control us. This is what liberation struggle looks like. I thank you. It makes me good to know the next generation is doing what you're doing.
Thank you for that. See you soon, Sister Betty.
All right. While we're on the roll, we want to take it to a warrior who understands what gentrification is all about. Sister Nellie Bailey, fighter for housing in Harlem for decades, a warrior for political prisoners, a supporter of Lynn Stewart, and a member of Black is Back Coalition, your mic is open.
Thank you, Sister Betty. The reports have been wonderful because it is part of what is happening on the ground all over this country, black people rising up. And very quickly, I'll come back to the housing thing, but I want to talk about what's going on in Bessemer, Alabama, the Amazon workers. 5,800 workers there in that once thriving steel town. The population is 70% black. Amazon has been there. As so many corporations have went to the South because there was no unionization that was happening there. But things are very, very different in Bessemer, Alabama, which is 16 miles southwest of Birmingham. It's in the northern section of Alabama. Anyway, Amazon has a plant there. 580,000 feet. That is the size of the plant. The workers are in the town. Just let me tell you a little bit about the town, because the town's population is almost 70% black. It used to be a steel manufacturing town, but with deindustrialization in this country, steel fled overseas, mostly to China. And so Walmart and others, not only Walmart, but Amazon moved in, because in the South, even in a right-to-work state, there are no unions. So here is Amazon with assets of over $1 trillion, and they are exploiting their workers to the point where in this town of Bessemer, Alabama, the median income, and it, by the way, it has a high female household, single female household, black women with children. And you can imagine that Amazon is not contributing to the education there. But nevertheless, the workers will vote, and it will be a mail-in vote as to whether or not they will have a union. And this is, and we have to remember, if we go back to Dr. Martin Luther King, King was killed as he was supporting the sanitation workers in Memphis. So this possible breakthrough in the South in unionization opens up a political opportunity and field unlike anything that has ever happened in the South since Reconstruction. And so I think that's it. But let's just talk a little bit about Bezos and the profits that he has made. Do you know that Amazon paid taxes for the first time in 2019, and it was 1.2% of their gross profits for that year? So the exploitation, and even though they brag that the workers make $15 an hour, we all know that $15 an hour is nothing. And when you think of President Biden and the $15 an hour proposal that they want desperately to get out of this stimulus package, and that this will only come into fruition in 2025. The exploitation of workers is part and parcel of expanding our political outreach. It's part and parcel of Black political empowerment, because if you have a job and if you have job security, then you can move on that political front. Now, Stacey Abrams of the Democratic Party, their shero, is already in Bessemer. They have made outreach there because they realize the not only the economic but the political significance of this. Will it open up the South in terms of unions, which I believe is very, very important? And just very quickly here on the gentrification front in Harlem that is almost complete, the struggle continues. We cannot talk about gentrification outside, and the sister from St. Louis talked about it, and that is the Black Miss Leadership class and how they're selling us out left and right. So what we can be grateful for and to have the ideological clarity to understand that Black people on the ground are rising up. We don't know about all that is happening, but the pivotal role of Black women workers at that plant in Alabama will open up new vistas of organizing and support that we can come together in a broad collaboration in terms of all that affects our community, community control of the police, the community control of education, and that if we establish this outreach and a broad informational campaign with these various forces, I think it will go a long way in terms of expanding this Black power political base that we all are working to build. Anyway, that's
well. Thank you so much for that, Nellie Bailey. But political control of housing is extremely important. And when you say the names Bessemer, Birmingham, it not only re-educates me, but it reminds me of my growing into manhood when the union leaders, Walter Reuther, Meany, these names were the names of gods. And in listening to these gods on the radio one day, when my father had said, when Reuther and Meany had said, we don't need to organize the South because we have enough money with the union membership that we have now. And so after the program, I said to my father, I says, well, if they don't organize the workers in the South, they're going to move all of the steel plants to the South. They're going to move the auto plants to the South. Little did I know, they will move them to the South, to Mexico, to Taiwan, every place in the world where there is cheap labor. But we had an argument over that issue. When I hear the name Bessemer, it brings it all back. And now we have the people, as we were talking last week, the movement is growing from the bottom up, getting rid of these corporate leadership. And I am holding my breath, looking to reach out to support those workers at Bessemer to say, we want a union.
Yeah.
So what about the housing, though? You wanted to add something more about housing before we move on.
Yeah. Let me quickly add something about housing. We are coming surely to the end of the moratorium on the rent moratorium. And here in New York, as I reported previously, 300,000 mostly whites, I believe, moved out of Manhattan, which I think is good because gentrification has diminished somewhat because the capital isn't here and people are moving out. And here in Harlem, just to speak plainly, these white people, middle and upper income, they don't want to be around working class black people because they're afraid they might catch something. So anyway, things are on hold here in New York. The governor is under a cloud. The housing court, for the most part, is not open, and everything is being held in abeyance because there is no movement in terms of revenue. We are going to have a mayoral race that's coming up, and the biggest issue there is going to be about housing. And when you think, if you don't live in New York, that people are paying or were paying upward $3,500 for a one-bedroom apartment, $4,500. The average rent here in Harlem is about $2,500. But because of the mass migration out of the city, the landlords have had to reduce the monthly rents. That is one thing. But folks will be subject to evictions. The homeless population here in Manhattan, and I would imagine in Brooklyn as well, has exploded. You can go to Riverside Park and you see families, women, couples with their suitcases. The situation here is what it was like 20, 30 years ago on the Upper West Side because people are, in fact, being evicted. They lie and say that they are not, but they are. And this is happening all over the country, evictions, and most of the evictions are working class black people who now are unemployed, who have no income, no discretionary income. Their kids are home. 40% of African Americans do not have access to the internet. So how are these kids being educated? What's their
vocabulary? Well, thank you so much for that, Nellie. As I say, education, 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 and we're getting an education this evening. Sister Betty, you're next. Sister Betty.
All right, we want to go on. We're going to ask Brother Tom to keep the energy flowing. We've got a long list, so we want everybody to be mindful. We've extended the time. Brother Tom, Syracuse, Manhattan Green Party, your mic is open.
I don't see him. Okay, move on.
Okay, who's speaking now, please? I'm sorry, 813, your mic is open. Who's calling? And we'll get back to Tom. Okay, just hold on 1 second. 813, the last number is 8341.
The last four
digits.
Yes. Betty, this is Chimarenga. from there.
All right. Did you want to say a few words before we go on?
Yeah. I just wanted to appreciate the whole question that Nellie Bella was raising around housing, and just appreciate the support for the candidates in St. Louis, Herdosha Kalambayi Bentham, and Tachara Masimba.
All right. Yohuru, thank you for calling in. And where are you calling in from again?
I'm in St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis.
All right. Thank you. Keep it going. Okay. Brother Tom, I think we got it right this time. Your mic is open. 8367.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for understanding.
Hello. Are you ready for me?
We're ready for you, Tom Syracuse.
Okay.
Give it to us.
We have an imperialist administration. President Biden's military budget is slated to reach $750 billion for this year. In 1968, the Vietnam War cost $842 billion. This is the highest budget since the Vietnam War. The wars in the Middle East have already cost over $1 trillion. In addition, the United States provides military aid to Israel, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Tunisia, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, the Ukraine, and the Philippines, amounting to billions of dollars annually. The U.S. military budget is more than the combined military budgets of China, Russia, the UK, France, Germany, India, and Saudi Arabia. Russia and China are depicted as threats to the United States, but they do not have bases surrounding the United States. An aircraft carrier costs $13 billion, and a nuclear-powered bomber billions more. And who can estimate or what sky wars will cost? And many of these weapons will never be used. Instead of using military personnel to maintain the hundreds of overseas bases, the Pentagon employs much more expensive 600,000 private contractors. The Veterans Administration's expenditures have tripled to $216 billion in recent years as veterans return permanently and physically disabled. President Biden has close ties with the Pentagon, and there is no indication that he intends to reduce the military budget, which comprises half of the U.S. federal budget, while the economy is in a crisis that rivals the Great Depression of the 1930s. And so we have a situation that calls for the working class, black, brown, white, to mobilize a mass movement to oppose this madness, to oppose this this belief that we have to be the world's number one military superpower. And that's already happening in other countries, such as India. And at the same time, we have a situation in which the pandemic virus is out of control. 500,000 Americans have already died from this pandemic in the last year. And so the American people have a great challenge ahead of them to oppose this madness. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for that, Tom Syracuse. But I would like everyone, if there's one thing that I want you to take from Tom's discourse, is that all of those dollars, each dollar, there is a piece of profit. There is money in war. And we, as Tom Syracuse says, we must stop the warmongers from spending our money on war and start spending money on health, education, and maybe even housing, and down the line, peace. Sister Betty.
All right. Before we go to Sister Dolores, we want to open up the mic for 3819. 3819, do you want to give us a brief analysis?
Yeah, I mean, to me, when you're talking about, especially the topic that was just talked about, you know, you talk about war and profit. It seems to me you want to blame the Western cultural world or Western hemisphere for, you know, imperialism and stuff like this. But when many other countries spend way more money on war, I mean, Saudi Arabia and you know, Iran and Russia spend way more money on war, while the West tends to spend more money on, you know, human resources. But yet Western culture is racist, and I have a huge problem with that. I mean, Saudi Arabia still sells black people. Yemen still sells black people. Libya still sells black people. But it's the white man in the West that's to blame for it all. And I have a huge problem with that. And I would like to talk to y'all and have anyone give me, you know, actual information on how I'm wrong.
Could I give you some actual information? You just had actual information by Tom
Syracuse, and everyone on this program, you want to talk about actual information?
We're talking about New York City, for example. 70%, I'm going to give you a fact now, just listen, 70% of the school population is black and brown. The money that is spent and controlled by the 70% school population is less than 5%. Is that a figure that blames anyone other than the institutions, the political institutions that control the money? On top of that, when they get the money, our children are not educated. And if you don't understand, let me conclude with one statement, and then I'll let you speak. What we want in our communities is what you have in your communities. But what you do is you control the monies in your communities and then come to our communities when we say, wait a minute, we would like to control our own money. Then suddenly we become anti-white. That is ridiculous.
So you're giving me a straw man. First of all, I'm from Appalachia. And, you know, the richest school in Appalachia is a black and brown school. Okay, so that black and brown school in Appalachia gets way more money than poor white schools. So your whole thing of, like, this is a white man conspiracy is bullshit. We can go all around the world. White people are
I said it was a rich man's conspiracy, and many white people go along with it. And when Mr. Trump says make America great again, he wants to make America what it used to be when the rich controlled the rest of the world through imperialism, brought the money home, but the poor allowed it to happen as long as they were first in line. And so we're saying we're going to end both of those agendas. We're not going to allow to go to war to steal other people's resources. We're no longer going to allow the few to control most of the money, and we're going to no longer allow anybody to be first in line who is not qualified to be there. And that is the story that we are talking about.
I would like to interject here. I agree with you about Saudi Arabia. I agree with you about Yemen. But they don't claim to be trying to make the world safe for democracy. They come right out and say it. We have a royal family, and the royal family will chop your head off if you don't listen.
Wait.
And I must remind you who overthrew the democratic regime in Libya. What was her name again? I think it was Hillary Clinton. So with all due respect, I understand what you're saying.
You're not letting me talk. You're not letting me talk. You have one dude who's like,
yes,
sounds
you
like.
You have 1 minute. Finish. Give us your thoughts.
So you don't sound like you done drank a fifth. And you know, here's the thing. You want to talk all this shit about Western society, Western culture, and blame everything on that those problems. You've never once talked about banking. You never once talked about the IMF. You never once talked about the WTO. You want to talk shit about the white man? You want to talk shit about that? Really? Really? How about we talk about slaves still get sold in Arabia? How about we still get slaves get sold in Israel? How come we don't talk about that? No, it's only the white man. The white man ended slavery. The white man made the nigger life 10 times better than anywhere around the world. How about that? How about fucking that? Huh? Yeah.
Well, it's
you
a good
tell
idea.
Me,
we
you
should
me,
talk about
you,
the
hey,
International
up,
Monetary
shut
Fund.
Shut up,
we
shut
should
up,
talk
faggot.
About
shut,
banking
shut up,
in America.
You
we
me,
should talk
you
about all
me.
Those issues, and we should look at the people who are controlling these institutions. And when
who's
we talk
controlling?
About banking,
who's controlling?
We have to
who's
think of
who's
King
controlling?
Henry VIII
who's controlling?
When he took off the heads of most of his wives, and when the bankers said that they were going to control it.
Tell me,
his
tell
answer
me.
Was,
hey,
if you
hey,
try
faggot,
to,
hey, faggot,
we will take
hey,
off
faggot,
your head.
Hey,
yes,
faggot.
We must
tell
do
me,
history,
tell me,
but we will
tell
do
me
total
right now,
history.
Tell me right now.
Call in
tell
again
me right now.
When we do have
shut
time.
Up.
Sister Betty.
Tell me right now.
I thank
tell
you
right
for
now.
Calling in. I hope you'll call in again, but
wait,
we've got
wait,
a long
stop.
List of people
one question,
who will probably
one question,
want to respond.
One question,
we will open your
question,
mic if you want to respond
question,
to them, but we've got a
question.
Long list.
Do the Jews run the bank or the white man?
Thank you.
Do the Jews run the bank or the white man?
Oh, boy, that's I'm going to kill you. Okay. All right. Without further ado, Brother Joel, your mic is open. Sister Dolores, you're following after Joel. And Kazi, we see you. We know everybody wants to respond to the last speaker. Feel free. We may open up the mic, his mic later on, but not right now. Thank you. Brother Joel, your mic is open.
Yeah, well, I was just listening to that last caller. And I remember when we were having what was called the Tompkins Square Uprising, which was a smoldering insurrection. It actually is still going on to a certain extent. But they have a slogan in that struggle, which held most of us together and kept us looking at our, keep our eyes on the prize. And that, actually, it was two slogans. One was, fight the system, not each other. And the last caller seemed to be finding ways to divide us up into fighting each other and into creating various scapegoats other than the super rich, although he did mention the International Monetary Fund and the bankers, but then he tried to give that an ethnic twist so that the populations could be set against each other. And, of course, the super rich would go, I was going to say, laughing all the way to the bank, but they are the banks and the corporations and so on. So this person had better think about if he really considers those things problems among people that he relates to, how to unite with all of the other forces that we need to fight the really powerful super rich that run this country and run the world and rob the bulk of the people in the world, although differentially in what is conceived, setting us against each other because the only way that such a small minority can rule over such a large majority, that is the handful of bankers and major corporations against the work people or as he's been put more recently at Occupy Wall Street, the 1% dominating the 99% is through divide and conquer. That's their method. And that person seems to really be into spreading that kind of mentality instead of putting out a something which is really the solution. And the other slogan that we had in the Tompkins Square Uprising was class war, not race war, build an army of the poor. And that's what it was largely about. And that was the struggle which united people along all these ethnic lines against the system, and locally, because it was largely the local struggle, or the part of the worldwide class struggle, it united people around that slogan, and we were in the process of building something of an army of the poor at the time, and we created a neighborhood which was somewhere between a zone of resistance and a liberated zone. And it's the only struggle that I know of recently that's been able to organically unite many of the people in the neighborhood, and where it fought the state and took on the police with hundreds and hundreds of arrests and so on. So also, in that struggle, a lot of the core of that struggle was based on the squatters movement, which was a rebellious movement of many people who, from different angles, were opposed to the system and had actually seized territory. You could say, if you put all of the squats together, there were hundreds of squatters and dozens of squatted buildings. And this was resulted as a response, a direct action response to the fact that there was so much homelessness and there was yet so many buildings that were either vacant or out of which people had been driven by landlord abandonments and by mass evictions that had been mainly taken over by the city. But there was an invitation. You're out in the streets. You don't have a roof over your head. There are empty apartments. Well, move into those. And it took a lot of struggle, but a lot of those squats lasted for years as the struggle continued. And some are still there. And it made a permanent mark on the community and on the city, the state, the country, and even the world, because it became a world focus. I remember there was a cartoon in the Daily News.
Well, that's a wonderful period you were speaking of, Joel, when the people took action.
I just want to relate back to the thing that Nelly was saying about the massive increase of homelessness. And the squatters had an organization called Eviction Watch, which mobilized neighborhoods to resist evictions, and the idea was that that we don't have to just allow evictions and accept them. As a matter of fact, they can be resisted, and they can be resisted successfully. It's only about mobilizing the strength of the people.
Well, thank you so much for that, Joel. But one of the comments I would like to make around that period, shortly after, they doubled the size of the New York City Police Department and militarized it, and we have a true army of occupation. They have jumped ahead of us while we were arguing over issues that were not as relevant as the main issue of the wealthy controlling most of the money. And until we get to that situation, there's going to be a split, because as you see now, all of the money is at the top. Too little money in circulation. There is going to be a fight over who controls that money. And historically, in America, the white communities benefited from racism. There are racists, deniers of racism, that will be a problem, even to the extent where in 2008 a website went up. This was related to the 2008 economic disaster, and the website went up and said the problem was that black people had everything. Well, it was pretty difficult to keep that going. I think it lasted 2 weeks. But this is the issue. Until people understand what is real, we have a problem. And this is what this program is about. As I say, education, education, education. And the right wing is listening to us. They don't like what we say. But I say, put them on every now and then. Let them expose themselves or let them talk about what they feel is real. It's not their problem. Well, maybe not that individual's problem, but the guy sitting at Bezos, all of these guys, Biden, all of these guys up there, they have a position. Sister Betty.
Okay, Sister Dolores is here, and Deborah Rosario from the Green Party, hang in there. Sister Dolores, your mic is open. And we ended up spending more time than we had anticipated, so we need the following group of speakers to be aware of that. We want to get everybody in. The people from New Orleans are calling, and it is urgent that we hear their message. Sister Dolores, yes. Your mic is open.
Okay. I just want to briefly go back to the National Urban League's 2020 report on the state of Black America and just focus on the racial health inequality in this country. The report exposes the human toll and devastation of the global pandemic on Black America, and it lays bare the deep-rooted inequities that predated the pandemic and accelerated the virus's deadly spread. I'm just going to, summarize everything because I know we're running out of time. But, they mentioned that the pandemic has forced Americans to grapple yet again with the enduring consequences of slavery and the prevalence of a systemic racism in our country. In the public health system as well as the criminal justice system. And they're talking about the alarming and disproportionate ratio of Black people left gasping for air in the emergency rooms and at the hands of law enforcement, which is centuries of systemic racism. But they're saying that they're wanting to let folks know that the people who are getting sick the most are the Black people and dying at the highest rate, and that there are disparities in how Black patients are even treated as the pandemic presses on and how they're treated in the emergency room, and they tend to be far sicker when they usually go to receive treatment, and it's partly because they don't have health insurance and because the systemic racism in the healthcare system downplays their symptoms, and that's supposed to be very common. The other thing I just briefly want to mention that this week, a report came out in terms of the drop in life expectancy and the lifespan of Blacks, and which happens to be 3 years less than for whites and 2 years less for Hispanics. And in the Instagram news this week, they were talking about the mental health disparities that are affecting the most at-risk communities, and especially regarding the COVID pandemic. And they're talking about the barriers to care, the continuity and quality of service, and that often punitive nature of the mental health policy and delivery, including racist practices that occur way too often. And I remember in December there was an NBC report that stated when they were talking about mental health services for Blacks, they said there are only 4% of Blacks in as psychologists, so that even limited the the treatment that they're going to receive and the quality of the treatment. So I'm going to wrap this up now because of the time frame and maybe get back to it some other time. Okay.
Thank you so much for that, Dolores, reporter on the ground about what's happening for real. Thanks again, Dolores Cox, Sister Betty.
All right, we want to move right along. Before we go to Brother Kazi and Brother Val, Sister Deborah, your mic is open. Hello? I'm sorry.
Hello?
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 Yeah,
hello?
I'm not Sister.
Okay, 401. You can, please go. 401, please go.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay, okay. All right. First of all, my heart goes out to all the political prisoners. And I'd like to thank the Green Party of St. Louis for endorsing Columbia. I'm going to make my statement real short, but I don't know if you know that the Green Party has been thrown out of the ballot, you know, and this is just another indication that we don't have a democracy in this country. And, you know, we're living in we've always lived in a control fascist state. It's just now more white Americans are being made aware of it, you know, and I think minorities and especially the African-American community have known this for a long time. And I think you should be congratulate yourself for having some right-wingers actually call into your show. That means you're making an impact. And that means, and this is a way to educate them and open their eyes, you know, that there is a force out there, right, that is controlling this country. They go into conspiracy theories, and they don't understand that this country has been in an imperialistic force for many, many years. And for that gentleman that called in about, you know, Libya, and obviously he doesn't have access to information, and that's one of the things that is good with your show, that he is listening to you, right? And you are you are making an impact, that he has to call you, you know, to complain. But I think the biggest challenge for this country is the control of information and getting educating people to know our past and know what's going on here in the present and know what's coming from the government, you know, of the more the democracy that is diminishing right in front of our eyes, you know?
Well, thank you so much for that. And one of the statements I like to make is I go to Charles Dickens, who was not a socialist, but he believed in giving, personal giving. But in his Christmas story, in the third angel, when he opens up his robe and he says, "Beware these two children, want and ignorance. Beware ignorance. It's dangerous." And so, yes, we try to educate. We speak truth to power. And thank you. We invite people to call in and give their opinion so that we can answer. We appreciate you. Sister Betty.
Sister Deborah, I thank you so much for hanging in there. And I hope you'll call back and keep us informed as to what's happening in terms of our ecology and our planet, because I know that's one of your strong suits as well. Further ado, we're going to move right along. Paul, your mic is open. Are you still here with us, Paul?
Paul Gilman?
4295, your mic is open.
And how are you getting out of the hospital?
Yeah, this is Paul Gilman. Nice to be on your show again. I've been a little remiss, and I agree with everything Deborah said, that you're getting to people. You're doing a great job. I had COVID. I got out of the hospital, but I'm okay. My son had it too, but we got it in different places, but we had the same symptoms, and I think I'm fully recovered.
Great to hear.
Hello? But I want
to
talk about.
Great to hear.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the New York and the cannabis legislation.
Go ahead.
Governor Cuomo promised with, in his words, get it done this term, but there's been a lot of resistance in the Senate, not because there's anti-pot resistance, but because Cuomo's bill, the Carter, the Cannabis Regulation, the Taxation Act, empowers the governor to make all the rules, which is possibly a way of excluding anybody who's not politically connected from being part of the industry. And that's the real fight. The real fight is not whether we want cannabis or not, but who gets to control it. And this battle is being fought out in our legislature, in the New York State Legislature. And if you really want to understand how capitalism and politics works, follow this issue very closely, because this is all about big moneyed interests who are using their capital as a source of power to exclude everybody who suffered from the drug war so that these people can get all the profits. And Governor Cuomo
would like to facilitate that. So goes capitalism. Thank you so much for that. And as you say, whatever the issue, follow the dollar, and you'll see the same people working to control it. And the cannabis issue is a health issue. When you look and see if the experiments were used, we could find out more about cannabis. And the more we find out about cannabis, the more we find out about how it helps people. And so, with that being said, thanks for coming on, Paul. Glad to hear you're better. Sister Betty.
One of the things we have to be leery of is as we legitimize cannabis, the cops are saying, give us more money, give us more money, because some people are going to start committing crimes now that cannabis is free. So on one hand, people are saying community control of the police. On the other hand, they're defunding them, but the money's coming right back. If you don't understand capitalism, you're going to be spinning your wheels forever. We want to open up the mic for Sister Belinda from Louisiana. I hope we have the right number. I see several numbers from people from Louisiana. Sister Belinda, your mic is open.
Hey, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. Wow. Oh, my goodness. I am really enjoying your show. And I agree 100% with Deborah that you guys are really a powerful broadcast. I mean, it's reaching the masses, and the white wing people are listening, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing that they're listening. It's a good thing that, you know, they want to comment. And hopefully that they would continue to listen, because we're serious about the truth that they have to know. They can get their feelings out of this, because this is real. Right now here in the state of Louisiana, we want the world to know that slavery is alive and well, and it's coming from the colonizers. You know, they done ran out of black people, locking them up and snatching them off the street for smoking a joint and snatching a purse. Now they're going after the white people to fill up their prisons and make slaves out of people so that they can make billions of dollars. You know, it's real. It's happening right now as I speak. And I want the world to know that they have an opportunity to come to Louisiana and in this moment of history that we're in, because we have caught them red-handed with their draws down. The United States Supreme Court said that what they did here in Louisiana to put a person in prison and make a slave out of them was unconstitutional. What they did, if not criminal, they did it for over 120 years. And right now, people are being held hostage. Thousands of people are being kidnapped in these godforsaken hellhole prisons and jails right now as I speak, and they refuse to let the people go. Even when it's time for them to be released, they still hold them there. Okay, so that's the truth. Whether you like it or not, that is the truth. And we need help here in Louisiana. We need all the people to be let go free, because Louisiana have been known as mass incarceration, more people incarcerated per capita than anywhere else in the whole world. Okay, and that's the reason why it's ground zero for slavery here in Louisiana. So I want to give an update on Pastor Victor because they manufactured a crime against this man that never happened. That's how serious it is. They manufactured. They made it up. They concocted. It was a nexus. They all connected and worked together. The judge, the sheriff, the police officer, the attorney, all of them worked together to manufacture a conviction against a man and made up a crime that never happened. And they took this man's tragedy and made it a living nightmare. So I want the world to know that right now, this man is sitting in prison with no conviction. They're holding him hostage. And this is wrong, what they're doing. It's wrong.
Yes, Sister Belinda Parker Brown, we want you to tell people how we get in touch with you. Give us, again, your website. How do we get there? How do we support Pastor Victor?
Well, Louisiana is first in this curse, and I want people to know that right now we're getting ready to have a press conference on this Thursday. We have been successful at putting a report out to the United Nations, and we want everybody to know. Sister Betty and Brother Ralph, I appreciate y'all so much because without people like you all to help us get the word out and let the world know what's going on here in Louisiana, I don't know where we would turn. So I appreciate all the listeners that's out there to be a part of our press conference this Thursday. I'm sending you all the information, Brother Ralph. Would you please circulate this information to all of your listeners so that they can participate in this press conference where we're going to talk about the state of Louisiana. It's a curse. It is a disgrace when it comes to the criminal justice system here. And I want people to call me. If you have any questions, call me. Come down here. Visit us. We will take care of you. You can call me at 985-503-0626. You can also go to our website and read about us. Go to our Facebook at Louisiana United International. That's Louisiana United International. You can Google us at www.launited.org. We're serious about freedom for all of the political prisoners, freedom for all of the people that are being held hostage and slaves right now in these hellhole jails and prisons across this country.
Well, thank you so much for that, Sister Belinda Parker Brown. We will send out the information that you sent to us to everyone on this program far and wide, as far as we can. Facebook, because this question is just coming to another head. It has been festering for hundreds of years.
Well, thank you, Brother Ralph. Brother Kazi, before we go to Brother Val, did you want to throw in some words of wisdom?
Sure, sure. Sure thing, sister. How y'all be? All power to the people.
We're hanging in there, Brother Kazi.
Yeah, I came on late, but I caught that the reactionary speaking there, you know. And I was just wondering, you know, like if he knew that, you know, like there's always, ever since the inception of this country, there's always been, you know, two separate nations within a nation.
Right.
You know, and I mean, we've never been united. We've always been separate and unequal, not like Plessy. You know what I mean? And so,
I
don't understand, you know, like, you know, because black people have not won nothing in this country. Everything has been, since we come here, has been run by them. So this mess wasn't created by us. And all we're trying to do is get separate. They don't want to be around us, you know, but they don't want to let us go. But we need our own.
Well, thank you so much for that, Kazi. Kazi Torre, political prisoner who fought Boston, New York, Jericho, who fought for our rights. Next up, Val, your microphone is open.
Before we go to Val, Brother Richie, we want you to give us a quick shout-out, and we'll put you on first next week. What did you want to give us in terms of quick update before we go to Val?
We're just working hard on Michael Kimball. He has a lawyer. We've been writing to him. He has supported. And we're hopefully having an update on when he's going to get his parole hearing soon, hopefully. We'll get an update.
Thank you, Virginia. We apologize for the lateness. As you can see, it's been an interesting night. Brother Val, you want to take us home?
Yes, good evening. You know, after hearing about the prison situations, you know, and the Black History Month, let's recall Sidney Poitier, whose famous movie, The Defiant Ones, showed that even after he gets out of prison, you know, there's still so much tension, so much racial tension. Sidney Poitier, by the way, I mention him because we also celebrate his birthday this weekend, this last weekend of Black History Month. And, of course, we also recall his other movies, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, In the Heat of the Night. You know, and of course, all teachers will recognize or will appreciate To Serve with Love. But having cited these four movies of his, you know, which, of course, he's did a whole bunch of other movies too, you know, we ask ourselves, have we really progressed since, you know, since the depiction of Mr. Poitier's movies that were supposedly set in the 1960s? Or are we just basically stagnating, you know, in terms of freedom, emancipation, and real rights? I think I'm going to just leave it at that, you know, and of course a prayer for Tiger Woods, you know, who was injured in a car crash a few hours earlier today. You know, he has been crucified, you know, unlike, you know, I mean, he was crucified for personal indiscretion while, of course, guys like Epstein, you know, have gotten away with mass murder. And of course, William DeBoer was also celebrating his birthday today, you know, and he actually was born in America, but after his great accomplishments in the co-founding of the NAACP, you know, and he also published a great collection of essays called The Souls of Black Folk. But of course, he died in Ghana. Speaking of Ghana, and this is my last point. Stevie Wonder today announced that he has to take his children and grandchildren to Ghana just to safeguard their present and their future. So folks, let's contemplate on all
of that.
Before
we hang up, the last four digits 1623. Did you want to say something? 269,
yes,
last four digits, 1623.
Yes, I did.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Brother Ralph and Sister Betty, and listen to you as well as listening to so many fruitful and very intelligent other people on this call. Let's say something about dementia. Demented means mentally ill. But one to say that we're not discussing what goes on in Iraq, what goes on in Arabia, what goes on wherever else. But we're catching more hell here today than we've ever seen in our lives. It's a shame to me. That means that that young man or whatever that was, that thing that was on there, is just as dead as a Rush Limbaugh. I'll say that, and I mean that. That's how dead they are. Anytime you form an insurgency on your capital, anytime you go up to put a noose around your vice president's neck, I didn't vote for him. Anytime you run up and you have so much hatred in your heart for people, and then you have the nerve to come on this broadcast and talk to Brother Ralph Pointer and Sister Betty like this, you give me a call, buddy. 269-1623. You give me a call, pal, and we will settle it out. I'll say this to you all. We are in a war. We already know it. It's about to get bloody. They're proving it right now. That dog just called you, and I mean a dog. I'm like Malcolm on this. You can't take, you can't mix with a dog and think that you won't catch fleas. Any animal that would call an abusive, as he has been towards you all, is an insult. You don't insult our relatives. You don't call and make these kind of insults. If you're a man, you meet up with a man. And since you want to be a beast, we know how to treat a beast. 5829-589-1623.
My brother, you have made your point, and it is quite clear, and this is the position that we must stand on as people who are oppressed.
Go ahead.
The end of oppression is getting out of it the same way that they got us into it. Good night, my brothers and sisters. Thank you for taking the time to spend it with us in terms of education, 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 and entertainment. Thanks again, and good night.